Open your Bible to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. This is where we'll be spending our time tonight, with a good many references to the things that are said in these verses. And the bottom line of this message that we're going to gain from these three or four verses is to never give up. Don't stop trying. Don't turn back. But just keep serving the Lord. First, let's read. He says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." The Bible, and especially this writer here, describes the Christian life as a race. And it is not described as a short race. It's not just a 100-yard dash. It's not just a 440 dash. It's more like a marathon, one where you just keep on running and keep on and keep on and keep on. And I think it's with this idea of a long race in mind that we have the natural question to ask ourselves, have you ever been tempted to just give up the race and turn your credentials in and just forget it all? And as we say sometimes, throw in the towel. I think all of us have felt that way at times. We felt like just giving up, just quitting. But in every long-distance race, there are moments when our sides hurt, our lungs hurt, we're out of breath, our muscles ache, our mouth is dry. Every imaginable thing happens to us when we're in a long-distance race. It's hard to keep going. Tonight, we're going to be challenged for the next few minutes to just not give up the race. Now, as a church, I think I can speak for all of us that we're all pretty well committed to just getting people into the race, getting people started, converting people to Jesus, turning their lives over to him to begin the Christian life. And we go all out for that. We try to teach people and encourage people, beg them to come and listen, ask them to read their Bibles, ask them to study with us. We go to a lot of efforts to get people into the race. But I want to tell you now that after doing this for more than 50 years, I can tell you that the most difficult part of it is not getting people into the race, but getting people to stay in the race, year in and year out, and not giving up. Well, this is the first part of June, and it hasn't been all that long since the first of the year, and you remember what happens along about the first of the year. We all make all these fancy resolutions. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do the other. And so it hasn't been very, very long since we've just gotten started on some of our worthy goals. But chances are, some of you who started out with some of those worthy goals, you have just, it's kind of fizzled out by now. You know what I mean? We enter the new year and we start thinking in terms of new commitments. You know, we're going to lose the weight. We're going to control our temper. We're going to discipline the kids. We're going to stop smoking. We won't drink anymore. We're going to be running now. We're going to get organized. We're going to be in church more regular. Any of those resolutions sound familiar to anybody? I think so. Because you're just like me, and our list can be pretty long. But even though we start out with great intentions and strong convictions and commitments, somewhere along the line, a lot of us just kind of weaken, don't we? I wish I could have up here with me, if we had the room, and we don't, In fact, we would need a room as big as this. I wish I had all the exercise equipment that you people have in your houses. You know where it is. It's in the attic, or it's in the basement, or in the garage, covered with dust, piled over in the corner. Some of it's covered up with pizza boxes. I know you. You're just like me. You pay good money for that exercise equipment. You have those steppers and stretchers and ab rollers and weights, and you've got all that kind of stuff. You paid good money for that, and you had great intentions. What happens? One woman said, I joined one of those, I joined one of those spas, one of those exercise clubs 6 months ago. I had lost a pound. Her husband said, honey, you have to go. You can't just join the club and expect to lose. You have to go and work at it. And don't we all have to be reminded of that? You have to really be involved in it. Those who run the fitness centers will tell you that during the first month of the year, January, their attendance is high. And I can tell you that from experience. For the last 4 or 5 years, my wife and I have gone to the gym 3 days every week, and we've noticed that during January every year when we pull into the parking lot early in the morning on Monday morning, it's full of cars. You have to look for a parking place. You go in and all the bikes are under, they're being used, all of this equipment and that one. People are using that. They're just pumping like mad, you know. And I remind you, I said, just hold on. In about 2 or 3 weeks, it'll get easier to get in here. Sure enough, by the 1st of February, the crowd is thinner. Oh, I don't mean they've lost a lot of weight, but the number is thinner. They've quit. Instead of stopping to work out, we want to stop to eat out. How many diets have you been on anyway? Atkins, Weight Watchers, Sugar Busters, South Beach, Hamilton Beach, Daytona Beach, Waikiki Beach. Well, how many diets have you been on anyway? Most of us could say, well, we've tried several of those. Maybe you started out on this one, you know, Body for Life. And then pretty soon you're satisfied with the body for a month. And then pretty soon you're asking yourself, well, what's wrong with this old body I have? It's been pretty good for all these years. And so then we fall by the wayside. We bought all this Slim Fast, and then it gets out of date and you have to throw it away. The wife says, you don't drink that stuff. It's 6 months out of date. She brought home some rice cakes. I tried some of those rice cakes. Let me tell you, I think I would just as soon eat the lid off of a styrofoam box. It's just the same to me. It's really not very good. Or maybe somebody brings pizza to work, or homemade cookies, warm chocolate chip cookies. Or they bring in ice cream, or some fancy dip and chips, all that sort of stuff. Well, I guess we all have some besetting food that we really, really, really like, and it's hard for us to turn away from it. Okay, enough of that. And I wanted to get you in a good mood and laugh a little bit so that you could stand what I'm going to say to you next. Do you know what a kneeling bench is? Yeah, you've been to those weddings, and I've done a number of weddings where the couple will stand there, and maybe it's a large wedding. And over here, right beside me, there is a kneeling bench. And I have walked over there with couples, and they would, with tears in their eyes, they would bow their heads, and we would pray together, and they've made a strong commitment to love each other until death separates us. And they really meant it. They were strong in that commitment. Little would he believe that 8 months from now, he would come home from work and find a note on the counter that says, I don't love you anymore and I want out. Little would she believe that 21 months from now that he would be loading his stuff in the trunk or in his pickup truck saying, I'm leaving. What happened? We just quit. They they can't imagine that as they commit themselves to each other. But when you fast forward a few years through a lot of disappointments and frustrations and problems and failure to adjust, we just somehow are ready to call it quits. Well, then there's another kind of commitment we make. The most important commitment you will ever make is to Jesus Christ, to be His servant, to come to Him and obey the gospel and to have your sins forgiven and become a Christian. Have you ever been inside a baptistry? You say, yes, I have. Or maybe it was, as we said yesterday, maybe it was a swimming pool or the ocean or a lake, wherever, or a river, wherever you were baptized. You've been there. We've said we're going to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And in fact, that's why we're here tonight, because we're keeping that commitment. Now, that's some time back there you made it known that you believed in Jesus Christ as the Lord of your life and the Savior of your soul, and you were ready to give yourself to Him, and you did. Are you still as strong in that commitment? Or, to put it another way, if you would just fast forward, say, 5 years from right now, try to fast forward in your mind. And if you continue going in the direction you're moving tonight, where will you be spiritually 5 years from now? You need to ask that. Everyone needs to ask that. And so I'm going to challenge us for the next little bit to never give up. And what I'm saying to you tonight, you need to hear, and I need to hear. I've heard myself say this before, but I need to hear it. And I believe you do too. And the message we're going to have is from Hebrews chapter 12, and starting with verse 1 here. It begins with these words, says, therefore, or wherefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. What's he talking about? When he says you are surrounded by a big cloud of witnesses, what do I mean, and what does he mean when he says that we are surrounded by a big cloud of witnesses? Well, all you have to do is turn back to the previous chapter there. Hebrews chapter 11 is just filled with references to people who had kept the faith. These were people who are familiar to us, people that we know. And the idea here in Hebrews chapter 12 is to picture ourselves as runners on a track. If you can imagine this as an oval track here around the perimeter of this room, and that it maybe is a quarter mile long. And then if you imagine the stands up there and the stands over there, the stands are all around the track at different places. You've seen that, especially at the Olympics. And the people in the stands are cheering for us. And so up in the stands, he's talking about this. He says, we're surrounded with a big crowd of witnesses. And he says, up there in those stands, there are people who are cheering for us. And he had mentioned them in the 11th chapter. There was Noah, for example. Noah is up there and he's cheering for me and for you. How long did it take this man to build that ark? 120 years? That's what it took. Well, Noah is up there and he's saying to you and to me, he's saying, look, I know what it feels like when your friends and your neighbors think you're nuts for following God and for doing what God said for you to do. I know what it's like when people call you funny names and some that are not so funny because of your commitment to God. Noah is cheering me on. And that's what he's talking about here. I'm surrounded by these witnesses. Up there in the stands is another man named Joseph. He's my favorite character in all of the Old Testament. And more ink is used to tell his story than any other in the entire Old Testament. It must mean that God really wants me to get that. I think it's about the providential care of God, and I need that. Joseph is saying to you, he is saying, listen, I was sold by a bunch of no good brothers. Then I was put in prison and kept there, and then I was accused of a crime that I did not commit. And there were times when I felt like saying, dear God, why have you forgotten me in this awful place? And so Joseph is saying to me, I know what it feels like when you feel like that God has forgotten all about you and that he's just letting you suffer. We're surrounded by this crowd of witnesses, and they're saying to us, don't give up. And if you're a church leader, Moses is up there in the stands and he's saying, look, I know what it feels like. When you are called upon by God to lead people and you don't feel adequate. He said, I just didn't feel like I could do that. God said, let me show you how. And God used other people to show Moses how. And so God is saying that to church leaders. And back in that 11th chapter, we read about people like Rahab, the prostitute, and Jacob, and Joseph, and Samuel, and David. And none of them ran a perfect race. All of them fell, sometimes hard. But they got up just one more time. And now they're cheering me on and cheering you on as we run our race. And they're saying, look, don't give up. You must not give up. And I wish I had the time to tell all of those people who are in the stands, but Hebrews chapter 11 paints a picture of them for us, and it says in verses 36 to 38, some of them faced jeers and flogging, still others were chained and put in prison, they were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were put to death with a sword, they went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world wasn't worthy of them. And so he says, you remember them. Don't you forget them. So when you're tired, and you will be, and when you feel like giving up, and you will, and when you feel like the race is too long and too hard, and you will, he says, don't you give up, because those people in the stands are watching you. But it's not just the people in the stands who are watching us. There are people right down here by our sides who are encouraging us. And I'll tell you now, I could not get along without them. There are people in my congregation back home who have encouraged me for 33 years as I've been working with them. And I couldn't get along without them. Mike Eubanks sits on the back seat back there, and he's a member of our congregation back home. He walked in a few minutes ago. His family, his mom and his dad, encouraged me so many times. His sister, and especially his brother-in-law, Lynn, whom I baptized, such a great encouragement to me. Lynn tells me all the time how much he appreciates me as a preacher. See, I don't need people to just pat me on the back and say you're the greatest and all of that. I just need to know that people love and appreciate what you try to do for them. And so it's people like that who are the witnesses that spur me on, that keep me going. And it's folks like you who give me a hug and say, thank you. Don't give up. And there are millions more out there who are ready to help us. Well, in the next few verses of Hebrews, three different times we read two words together. They are, let us, let us. And every time those words appear together, they're followed by a directive that will help us never to give up. The first one is here in verse 1, and it simply says, let us throw off everything that hinders. Now, this word hinder is actually a noun, and it refers to any kind of weight that is holding you back in this race. Anything that's holding you back, slowing you down. He's not talking about sinful things here. He'll get to that later. Not talking about sinful things at all. He's just talking about things that get in your way, things that hurt you, things that hinder you. And then he addresses the next clause when he says, the sin that so easily entangles us. He said, you get rid of that too. But in that first part there, when he just says, throw off every weight, he's just talking about things that get in your way that may not within themselves be wrong. And there are many of us who have been slowed down in our Christian life by things that are not wrong within themselves. We just get covered up with them. And we need to get rid of some of them. It may be a hobby. Hobbies are good. Everybody, I think, needs a hobby. You need something on the side to refresh your interests and refresh your minds. Hobbies are good. We need to pull aside sometimes just for some time off, some rest, R&R, as it were, as they say in the military. We all need that. Maybe yours is a personal relationship that you need to get rid of that's holding you back. Maybe yours is personal possessions of some kind that are holding you back. Possessions are not wrong within themselves. It's the use we make of them that makes it wrong or right. Let me illustrate. I enjoy car races. I've been to the Indy 500. I love to watch those cars run. But you know, at the Indy, there are 33 cars, you know, that start that race, but I didn't see a one of them with a luggage rack on the top. Are luggage racks wrong? Well, no, of course they're not. The luggage racks are okay. I didn't see a one of them that had that was towing a canoe. I didn't see any of them with a trailer hitch on them either. Nobody was pulling a camper when I saw the last NASCAR race. Campers are okay. I love camping, and I like to pull a camper. Now, I've got a trailer hitch on my car. Now, I've got a big luggage rack for my car. You know, those things are all right, but I'll tell you now, if you're in a race, you just need to leave those things at home because you're not going to win anything with any of those things that hold you back. So maybe you have something in your life that's okay within itself, but you've just become so covered up with it that it becomes a hindrance to you. Maybe it's a place on the lake. And places on the lake are wonderful, and I love to go and use my friend's cabin on the lake. But you know, if it's something where you're just going to go every weekend and stay away from the Lord and the Lord's people and forget about church, then there's going to be some spiritual problems in your life there. I think these people who originally read this book may have had some things that were hindering them, because just two chapters earlier, in chapter 10, the reader addresses this because they weren't putting God first and going to worship and meeting with the other believers. And the passage says, don't give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. Just don't give it up. I believe what he is saying there to me is, when it comes to church, when it comes to church attendance, then let it be a non-negotiable in your family. You know, I grew up in a family. My mother and dad were Christians. I started going to church every Sunday 9 months before I was born. And never did quit after that. And when I was a young boy at home, you know what the stupidest question I could have asked would be if it was, we got up on Sunday morning. The stupidest thing I could have ever asked my mother and dad would be, are we going to church today? What do you mean, boy? Is it Sunday? If it's Sunday, you know, we're going. If you're not in a coma, we'll be there. We were the first there and the last to leave. And I'm glad of that. And when it comes to church attendance in your family, I encourage you to let it be a non-negotiable. Don't argue about it on Sunday morning. Just don't argue about that. It's already settled. It's been settled a long time ago. Say to the children, that was settled before you were ever born. Because, you know, set aside all of the other reasons. One reason is that I need to be in a place like this with people like you to keep me from giving up and to keep my mind centered in the right direction. I need that. And I think you need that. And so throw off everything that hinders. And then he says, the sin that so easily entangles you. There are sins that can tangle you up and render you helpless. Do I have to explain that to you? Do I have to tell you that there are some things that if you get too close to them, they just kind of paralyze you spiritually? There are some personal associates that you have which when you are with them, it's just so much easier to do what's wrong. You know that. I don't have to explain that to you. Some of you in this audience remember Superman, and I'm talking about the original. I don't mean Reeve, Christopher Reeve. I mean the original. You remember Superman? He leaped tall buildings, and he could move faster than a speeding bullet. Nothing could stop Superman. He could do anything. He always rescued everybody. But you know, there was something in his life which, when he got too close to it, he didn't have any power. What was that he got too close to? Anybody remember?
Kryptonite.
Kryptonite. What is kryptonite? For land's sake, I don't know what it is. All I know is that when he got too close to it, it paralyzed him. He just couldn't do anything. It robbed him of his power. There are some movies that you don't need to see. Because when you watch them, it takes away your spiritual life. And it's hard for you to think even spiritual thoughts. There are some books which when you start to read them and you get into some of that filth, you just need to close that book up and if you bought it, then throw it away. Burn it up. You don't need to read it, nobody else does. There are some magazines that you don't need to thumb through. There are some people you don't need to be with because when you see some of those movies, read some of those books, and with some of those people, it paralyzes you spiritually and pulls you away from God. You know that. I don't have to explain it to you. He calls it the sin that so easily entangles us or the sin which so easily besets us. We all have weaknesses. For David, it may have been lust. For Samson, it was probably pride. For Judas, it was probably greed. I don't know what yours is, you don't know what mine is, but I know myself and you know yourself. And those places where you are weak in your life, you just need to be especially careful about them. And cast them aside. Some sins will knock you down. Some experiences in this life will knock you flat and it will leave you flat. And you've just got to be encouraged to get up, to walk again. Most of you probably saw the movie Chariots of Fire. You may remember the scene that may have appeared more like Hollywood fiction, but it was true. Eric ran the race between Ireland, Scotland, and England. It was the 440. The gun fired, and there was a lot of shoving in order to get to the inside on the front line. You know how that goes. But somehow Eric got his feet tangled with those of another runner, and he just fell. He fell hard on the cinders. And he's sitting there momentarily, not knowing whether to get up or whether he even could get up, I suppose. But one of the officials just said to him, "Son, get up and run." And he gets up. He's 20 yards behind. Now, that's a long way to be behind in a quarter mile. But he's 20 yards behind, and he keeps running hard, and pretty soon it's 10 yards. He pulls into fourth place, and then third, and then second. And then when they come to the tape, he thrusts out his chest and wins and collapses on the track in total exhaustion. And medical personnel had to just pick him up off the track and then help him out. And there are going to be times in your life when the experiences that you have with other people and other things are going to knock you flat. I know, I've been there. There have been a few things that have knocked me flat. There were at least two times in my life that I can remember that I came just that close to just not ever preaching anymore. I was ready to give up, ready to quit. Listen, everybody in this room has scars, okay? Scars where you have fallen and hit the cinders hard. But listen to me, you get up one more time, and you keep running, the second phrase that I like in this passage is where it says, let us run with perseverance. The last part of verse 1 there. Run with perseverance. That's the key word. It's the call to never quit. And we all love that attitude of never quit. How often have we heard a coach after a big game or at the end of a tournament single out one of his players and suddenly tell you about that boy or that girl? When this player came here, when he came to this school, when she came to this school, they didn't have the most talent. But this kid didn't know how to quit. This kid kept on and on and on, and he's become one of the best. Run with perseverance. Sometimes the going gets tough, and we say, I need to take a breather. Let me tell you something. In marathons, there are no breathers. You don't take breathers in a marathon. Some of you may be already at the stage in your life when you feel like you're questioning your commitment, you're questioning your faith. You're questioning the Lord. You're questioning everything. Maybe some things have hit you really hard. Maybe the cancer has returned. Maybe it has claimed the life of a loved one. Maybe the divorce goes ahead and it goes through against your will. Maybe your child has broken your heart or is breaking your heart. Maybe you didn't get the job that you had dreamed about and you were qualified for and you should have been next in line for, but you didn't get it. Things have a way of hitting us hard sometimes and really pulling us down. And maybe you have just pulled off to the side and you've said to yourself, dear God, I didn't sign up for this. I thought that when I got on your team, your power would be with me and I could do anything. And let me tell you something. When you get on God's team, Satan is going to double up his efforts on you. He's going to work harder on you than he ever has before. And so when you're not feeling close to God, never give up. When you question your faith, don't give up. When you feel unworthy, don't give up. When other Christians have let you down, don't give up. When you feel you're all alone in your belief, don't give up. You just finish strong all the way to the end. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Paul knew when he wrote this, he didn't have long to live. I love to read 1 Timothy and then 2 Timothy because they're like daylight and dark. In 1 Timothy, Paul is so full of enthusiasm and strength, and he's just, you know, ready to, and he's leading Timothy along. Boy, you get into 2 Timothy, and it changes gears real fast because Paul knows he's about to die. And he says, you know, Timothy, you need to keep going. Because I want you to feel just like I do when you get near the end. He said, I have fought a good fight and I have kept the faith and I have finished the course. And because of that, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me. Not to me only, but all those who love his appearing. He said, Timothy, whatever you do, don't give up. And Paul didn't give up. And I so desperately want every one of you in this room tonight to not give up, but to live the spiritual life and follow Jesus. Don't ever quit. And I so desperately want that if I'm ever lying in a hospital bed with my family standing around me and I know that my time is very short, I just want to be able to say, I kept the faith. I didn't give up. And I have finished the course, and I am not afraid, because I believe in the promises of God, and I'm standing on His promises. So you just need to run with perseverance. Now, there is in this passage one last directive that is my favorite, and I want to leave us with this one. It is in verse 2 beginning where he says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. And so when you feel like giving up, keep your focus on Jesus, because it says He is the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider Him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. I don't know about you, but I really need that. And you'll just have to remember Jesus when you feel like quitting. I have found that to be the answer in my own personal life. My friends sometimes will fail me, but my Jesus will not. Fix your eyes on Jesus, because that's where your strength comes from. Just remember the crucified Christ. On every Sunday, we eat the Lord's Supper at this table. And that's really what we're just doing. We're just keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus. He said, as often as you do this, do it in remembrance of me. What he is saying is, in different words, he is saying, fix your eyes on me. And the one thing, when the pain was most intense on the cross, he stayed on the cross for me and for you. And when it was nearly over, he said, it is finished. That was not a cry of defeat. It was rather a cry of victory. He is saying, what I came to do, I have done. It is finished. And so he knows how you feel. He's been there. So you remember him and you fix your eyes on Jesus. You see, this inspired writer wants us to just make, he wants to make it clear so I can really understand that my strength in this journey is not an inner strength. My strength for victory in Christ is not within me. I would have given up a long time ago if my strength were just me and my inner strength. It is not a matter of just gritting your teeth. It is not a matter of just strong determination. It is not a matter of just situatedness. It goes further than that. It is a matter of trust. The idea here is to fix your eyes on Jesus and you will find your strength in Him. Isaiah 40:29 says, He gives strength to the weary. He increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength, and they will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. That's those who wait upon the Lord. So our hope is not in ourselves. It is not in my inner strength. It is not in my self-discipline. It is not in my determination. Although there is a place for all of that. Our hope is in the Lord, because it is in His strength alone that I can finish the race. I love the story of Ricky Hoyt. If you don't know about Ricky Hoyt, then pull him up online and read about him. He finished one of the most difficult of all races, the Ironman Triathlon. You know, that's the race where you swim for 2 miles, get out of the water and ride a bike for 100 miles, get off the bike and then run for 26.2 miles. No wonder they call it the Ironman Triathlon. Well, Ricky Hoyt finished that race in a wheelchair, because he was totally disabled. And the reason I like the story is because the only way Ricky Hoyt could finish that race was because of his daddy. His daddy took Ricky and put him in a little boat that he had made, tied him on behind him, and swam for 2 miles, pulling Ricky behind him. Got out of there and took Ricky off, totally disabled, put him in this little makeshift seat on the back of the bike, and rode for 100 miles with him. Got off there and put him in a little cart, and ran with him, pulling him behind him for 26.2 miles. only reason Ricky Hoyt could finish the Ironman triathlon was because his daddy carried him along. Let me tell you, mister, here's the deal. Spiritually, you are Ricky Hoyt. You are totally disabled spiritually. You cannot live the Christian life on your own power. But you can live it, and you can finish the race under the power of your older brother, Jesus. He said, I will never forsake you. I will not leave you. Doesn't have anything to do with how determined you are, or committed, or how hard you sweat it out. You cannot do it. And so on down this road, when you feel tired, and there will be times, and when you feel like giving up, and there will be times, and maybe when you have given up, and there might be times, then you fix your eyes on Jesus and take hold of His hand again, and He will lead you through. Tonight and every night here, we've been calling you to make the greatest commitment you could ever make. The commitment is to follow Jesus Christ. Give your life to Him. Because all of us have sinned and come short of the glory of God, we just need Him. And there is no way we can be saved without Him. And if you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and if you're ready to commit your life to Him, and if you're ready to turn your life around and lean on Him for the strength that you must have, and let Him call the shots in your life, and let Him be the Lord of your life, if you're ready to do that, then you can tonight go with Him into His grave, be baptized into the death of Christ, and His blood will cleanse your heart. Can we interest you in doing that right now while we stand and as we sing?